So do I go?
Oh, I didn't know that part.
This is worth repeating.
Okay.
This is worth repeating.
Live storytelling from Texas Public Radio.
When I was 25 years old, my grandfather was in the hospital, and his brother had came to visit him. And so my great uncle Johnny and I were talking, and my uncle Johnny says, "You haven't met my son, have you?" And I said, "No, I haven't." And he said, "Well, he was adopted like you were." And I stopped talking, and I kind of looked at him. He goes, "You do know you're adopted, right?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, sure, I know Uncle Johnny, no problem." And I was thinking in my head, adopted? Nobody ever told me I was adopted. So my grandfather got better, and he went back to the farm, and Uncle Johnny went back to Minnesota, and I kept thinking about it, and I was like, why would my biological parents give me up for adoption? And why would my parents, who I always thought were my parents, never tell me what was the big secret? So I thought about it, and I was thinking, I wanted to know, but who was I to drag the skeleton out of the closet, you know? And I was really, really close to my parents, and I thought, well, maybe I'll ask my dad, because my mom was just a little bit more emotional. And so one day we were watching boxing, my dad and I, and I said, "Hey, Dad, how come you have red hair and blue eyes and I don't?" And he was like, "Oh, because you take care of your mother's side of the family." I said, "Oh, yeah, right, okay. Well, not to be, you know, anybody to keep bugging and stuff, I kept procrastinating about it, and I wanted to ask him again, but I just didn't know how to ask him. And unfortunately, within a year, my dad passed away suddenly of a heart attack. So it was at that moment I decided I was never going to tell my mother unless she told me first, because I never wanted her to feel abandoned. And by that I mean, she just lost my dad, who she loved very much. And when she was a little girl, her parents had to split up, and they left her behind with relatives. And I know that she felt really bad about that, so I didn't want her to ever feel like that again. So I kept it a secret, and I went on to live my life doting over my mother for the next 7 years. And when I hit about 33 years old, I had a son now, and I was having some medical issues, and he was having a little bit of medical issues, and I thought, you know what? Maybe I should go look for these people and find out my medical information. And so I joined this adoption organization that helps you find people. And you got to imagine, I was born in 1963, where it was really taboo to be adopted. It's not like open adoption nowadays. Everything was closed. It was a secret who your parents were. It's a secret who your, you know, that you were adopted. And so the first place I went was to the courthouse to see if they would open my records to see if I could get the medical information. So I went to every judge just about in one day, and I asked them if they could open my adoption papers and see if I could have the medical information. And all of them just about politely said no, except for this one judge. He was like, "You'll have to be dying on your deathbed until I open your adoption records. They're sealed for a reason. Now get out of my courtroom." And I was like taken aback, and I went outside and I thought, what a jackass. Right? But that man did not even know the secret to karma, because years later I read about him in the paper, and he was dying on his deathbed of a horrible disease. And so I went back to the adoptive organization. True. So I went back to the adoptee organization and asked for some more information, and they told me that I could use the digits on my birth certificate, my doctor birth certificate, to find the original. So I took my birth certificate, and I go up to the genealogy department of San Antonio Library, and I asked the librarian. She's like, "Yes, come over here." And she shows me this big bin about 3 feet wide, you know, and long and a foot deep, and she said, pulls it out and all these microfilms in there, and she says, "These are all the children born in Texas in 1963. She said, "Unfortunately, since you don't know your name, these are in alphabetical order, so you'll have to look through every single one of them just to find the digits." I was like, wow, okay. She goes, "But I'll give you a hint. Most children born that are adopted aren't given a name, so they write baby girl or baby boy. So if you just look up baby girl in the left-hand column and then scroll across to the right, see if your number matches." So there I sat for 2 hours, just about every day. And about the fourth week, I was sitting there and I read baby girl Solano, Pascual Solano, and I kept running my hand across, and all of a sudden, I see the same digits. I said, "Oh my God, I hit it, I hit it." And the librarian comes running over and she said, "You did it." She goes, "Oh, you're so lucky." And I said, "Why?" And she said, "Because the father's name's on the birth certificate. Most of the time it's just a woman, the lady, and they get married and change their names and they're so hard to track." I said, "Oh, that's awesome." So then she gave me the paperwork and I went on and I searched city books, phone books, went through the internet search, and I couldn't find them anywhere, not one clue. So then I read another book, and it says, if you can't find them, it's possible that they died. You should start looking in the cemeteries. I'm thinking, great. So the next day, I was leaving Kelly Air Force Base, and I was going up Couples Road, and I was going to make some errands, and I get at a stoplight right at the back of San Fernando Cemetery, and I notice all these beautiful orange flowers, you know? And it was a couple days past Dia de los Muertos. And then there's this one little coffee can, rusted. It didn't even have the pretty tin foil on it or anything. And it had three orange flowers in it. And I thought, how sweet. And I kept driving. And I was supposed to make a right to go to my errands, but something in the back of my head said, turn left. Turn left now, Helen. And so I did. And the next thing you know, I was inside the San Fernando Cemetery. And I thought, that's weird. So I got out of the car, said, I might as well look here. So I walk up to the counter, and I write Pasquale's name down on a piece of paper, and I give it to the lady, and I'm standing there. She comes back with a map and some numbers. And I went, he's here? She looked at me kind of funny, like, yes. I was like, oh. And I got the thing, and I, like, ran out to the car, and I got in the car, and I drove around to the area of the map. And I got out, and then I realized I couldn't figure out how to find the stone. And suddenly this man appeared out of nowhere. I think he was a caretaker. And I said, he said, let me help you. So he showed me how to count the rows and the stones, and he said, here it is right here. And I said, no, that's a woman. I'm looking for a man. Ah, mija, that happens all the time. Go back to the office. They'll give you the right number. I was like, okay. So I got back in my car, and I drove back up to the office, got a new number, drove back out to the same area, and the man wasn't there anymore. I thought, well, I guess I'll go look myself. So I went on. And I started counting the rows, and next thing you know, I'm by the fence line, and I'm walking down the fence line, and then there I see the stoplight. And I look down, and on this flat stone, I see Pasquale Solano. And right there is that old rusted coffee can with three flowers. And I knew at that moment that he had called me from the grave. That was no secret. So with that information, I was able to find out that I had 10 siblings, one of which was not still living, and a biological mother who was still alive. And I got to meet some of my siblings right away and then some later, and I got to talk to my biological mother on the phone. And it was kind of emotional and kind of odd, but I did ask her, why did her and Pasquale give me up? And she kind of changed the subject a little bit, and she said, well, you know, I never got to hold you, and I never even got to see you. And to me, that was my cue, like she didn't want to tell me, and that was okay. I just let it go like that. But for like the next 20 years went by, and I was doting over my mother and my son and my family and doing everything with them, but secretly I was sneaking off to be with my siblings to their weddings and to their births of their children and to everything that had to do with them, because I wanted to be a part of them, but I didn't know how to tell my mother, and I didn't want to hurt her. And in 2016, my mother had an aneurysm bust in her head, and she was in the hospital dying, and I was praying over her, and I was holding her in my arm, and I told her, Mom, God bless me with the best parents ever, and I just want you to know that I love you, and Daddy's been waiting on you a long time, and it's okay. I'm going to be okay. You can go. And she died right there, taking her secret with her. And it was funny because at the funeral, you know, she had a lot of people come. Everybody loved her, but my biological siblings also came to support me secretly, and they told me they understood how much I loved my mother, and that meant a lot to me. So after that, a couple more years went by, and my biological mother, Alicia, was sick, and she was in and out of the hospital, so I started going up to the hospital with my brothers and sisters to be with her. And I did get a moment alone with her, and I told her that I wanted to thank her for giving me life and for blessing me with all my siblings, and that I loved her, and it didn't matter why it ended up the way it did. And about a week later, she passed away. But it's okay, because I know my mom and dad, who raised me with my brother, love me, and I love them. And my siblings, my biological siblings, I love them, and they love me. And I loved Alicia, and I know she loved me. But the funny thing is, about sometime during that time frame, I had another medical thing done, and they did my DNA. So this whole time, I grew up thinking I was Norwegian, German, French, Alsatian, Mexican, Spanish. And the DNA says, no, you're half Native American and half Iberian. And that's not a secret, that's a fact.